Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kia ora and welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod again this week after a weekend of action. The action we've been waiting for, really. Seeing the Aussies, seeing some different styles, seeing some different teams. And it was a mixed bag, I suppose. James Parsons, Bryn Hall down in Christchurch. What did you make of that first weekend there, Jipper? When you think about the way that the Aussie teams stood up to the Kiwi teams and what was a 5-0, not romp, but success.
Yeah, I think you saw a little bit of, I suppose, the travel. Player factor. I think, you know, obviously with the Chiefs having to go after a final and going to the Force, that was quite a challenging trip and nearly tripping them up. And then I suppose the nature of the beast of not playing oppositions, I think, you know, if you look at the Canes, Waratahs, the different styles showed that defensively it posed some challenges, which led to an exciting brand of footy all weekend and some high-scoring matches, which was entertaining, I suppose, but I think as this progresses, it'll tighten up and be a lot closer than people probably predict after round one.
Well, you had a tight one, Bryn. 31-29, you're standing underneath the goalposts waiting to see whether or not you're going to draw it. How did you feel that that game played out? The Brumbies are a gutsy team.
Yeah, it was. I thought we were pretty lucky in the end, I think. The way he was, unless he was kicking, probably thought that was going to go over him. And then, I guess draws at this kind of time of year, even in this competition, with it being a sprint, it's seen as a loss. So, gutted for him, and it was great to see the Brumbies teammates to go over and give him a bit of love after missing that, after putting a hell of a performance. But, I guess for us, we just started off pretty well, but I guess the scrums was a big one. I think both teams talked about it in the media around just adapting that, and you know, we probably didn't adapt well to that. Couldn't get momentum through that, and we gave away penalties again. Discipline was massive for us again. We've talked a lot about it on this podcast, and look, we gave away 17 penalties and had 17 unforced errors. So putting on top of the scrum and not being able to get momentum off that through it being stop-start and trying to adapt to it. We put ourselves in good positions, but our discipline let them off the hook a bit. And then unforced errors at probably times where we were getting ready to break them, but an execution of not a pass or a breakdown penalty or losing the ball just kind of really felt it real clunky. So probably as viewers as well, it probably felt like that. But I think the Brumbies came back in that last 10 minutes and showed why they were the finalists. And look, they could have been a draw in the end, and it probably would have been a result that they would have been happy with. So, yeah, but the biggest learning, I think, is probably adapting to the new teams that you've talked about, especially in scrum time. And but it wasn't just in our game. There are other teams as well that problems just adapting to Australian teams. So I think going forward, it'll be something that will be worked on, and it'll be a lot more free-flowing, I think, week two and the weeks coming forward.
Dave Harvilli just thought, I haven't shown the complete package. I'll just go for an intercept try just to round my season out. That was quite impressive from him. But I thought touching on the scrums, it looked like the Crusaders sort of had a little bit of dominance. And speaking to Jace Ryan, is looked like obviously the Brumbies just couldn't absorb that hit. But you did make the adjustments and maybe just waited for them to hit you guys and then generate your power after that. So they struggled the week before against the Reds as well. So it's an area that normally they're really solid at and strong at. And obviously you've got a few Wallabies up front there. So an area that they'll want to sort out. And I think the Kiwi scrums across the board, if you saw in the Chiefs' Force game, the Blues obviously as well, were quite dominant. So, something that you have to look forward to You know, I don't think the All Blacks have had that dominance against the Wallabies, so interesting to see that across the board in the five games.
That tight head from the Chiefs on the opposition line was spectacular.
Yeah, massive. It was huge, and it was moments like that that probably got them through that game, because if you looked at the yellow cards in the Chiefs' force game, you know, they made double tackle. I think Brad Weber was their second highest tackles at 14. So when your halfback's making that sort of amount of tackles, if there was 15 on the field, you'd be looking at your tight forwards going, what are you doing to me, lads? I'm making that many tackles. But because, obviously, with the yellow cards and the red cards, he had to be in the front line a lot making those tackles and those sorts of plays. And then I think the lessons they took out of the final, they really made the force pay with their yellow cards, scoring the two tries. And that was, I think, that passage of play won them, you know, Nate Harris's try and then Soakula setting up Jonah Lowe, that took the score to that 27. And I know they nearly lost it, and, you know, you'd almost expect Moeta Iti to, you know, nail that kick normally. But that passage of play, that 10 minutes where they got that, you know, those 10 points was massive in getting that result.
One of the things that you could see from both of those close games where the kick was the last play of the game and it could have been a draw or it could have been a win, the reaction from the Aussie teams to their goal kicker, the way they surrounded him, they got him behind him, gave him a pat on the bum, you know, and just said, mate, we're with you. Well, it showed a lot about the culture within these teams.
Absolutely, but if you look at it, the goal kicking of both teams probably kept them in it. You know, like Lolasio was a sharpshooter, and Moeta the same. Like they didn't look like missing all night, and then they both only just missed. You know, it looked like they were going over, and it was the right side, especially in the force game, for the right footer, but it just shaved away like a little slice on the golf course.
But yeah, you've had a few of those in your time.
Oh, plenty. Yeah. And hooks, not many straight. But yeah, no, look, it added to the spectacle, and as I said, I think it just like that first weekend, it will tighten up as they get used to each other.
Bryn, did you feel like the constant restarts at scrum maybe aided the Brumbies a little bit? They're a team that quite doesn't mind stop start.
I guess a little bit. I think for us, I think we're a little bit frustrated around, because obviously you want to play at a high tempo, and I guess for us, we started so well with scoring a try off our face play and getting a really quick ball, and then, you know, we scored in the corner with Ethan Blackett in the first probably 5 minutes, and then after that passage of play, we went, Lolasio kicks out on the full, and then, you know, I think we had about four or five resets, and then we ended up getting a penalty from that, but yeah, it just kind of stunts it a little bit, and again, we did talk about on the field around trying to adapt to that and saying, having a solution around it. You know, you will leave that to our forwards, and they tried to do the best they could. But yeah, it was something different than we probably haven't faced this year, just around with stop starts. And I think probably a plan that has been used against us in the past is probably slowing it down, not due to not for scrums, but a tactical injury possibly, to try and slow down the game. But this is a little bit different. It wasn't trying to do it on purpose. It was more so, just the rules and I guess the change of what the Australians boys scrummage like. So for us moving forward, it's something that we have to talk about. We talked about it yesterday around what that might look like and having a plan in place, because again, when you do get the opportunities, when you do have the ball in play, we didn't execute very well. So that'll be definitely a thing moving forward, especially with the Reds, who have a good scrum, and especially with the travel factor going to Brisbane, they'll be a completely different team emotionally when they play against us on Saturday night.
Tactical injuries, how prevalent are they?
Oh, every team does it. Every team does it.
You might need a breather now and again, don't you? Everyone needs a breather.
Everybody does. But yeah, it's just again, it's coming back to, we haven't played an Australian team in, you know, 18 months, so they bring something a little bit different, even defensively as well. They brought something different on the weekend, which we aren't used to. New Zealand teams, you know, predominantly want to put you under pressure, whereas the Brumbies on the weekend were actually pretty good at just connecting and being a little bit more passive, and we probably didn't adapt to that. And like I said before, on the edges, we had a couple opportunities to draw and pass and put it away, and we would probably score off a couple of those players. But again, coming back to the Brumbies and how they defend, they did really well around just connecting, and then defended for long passage of play just after half time. I think we went 16-18 phases in that passage of play. So, again, it's just adapting, no different to the scrums. We have to adapt to that, but just getting used to how the Australian teams defend and how they play as well.
Two things. One, great answer. Secondly, masterclass in changing the subject.
Oh, classic.
That's absolutely that's brilliant.
That's the school of Canterbury Crusaders right there. Tasman Crusaders, sorry.
Tasman Crusaders. what about the Reds? You know, obviously the champions of Australia. Are people were maybe expecting a little bit more from them on that first game?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, first off, I want to point out that every time Michael Collins starts at centre, the Highlanders win. So I just think they should put him in the 13 jersey for the rest of the year. But I was surprised at their tactics exiting. They were putting sort of up and under bombs, I'd say. I don't want to say contestable because they were too far to be contestables, and then the Highlanders were just getting easy catches and attacking opportunities around their halfway, and they were straight away into their half. And I thought Sam Gilbert was exceptional on the night. You know, he was great at the back there, and it just didn't work for them, and they kept going to it all night. Mm. And if they're going to do that, they might as well start Vunivalu and kick high and contestable to his wing, because he's clearly, that's his strength, that's his weapon, so use it. Or at chance your arm, run the ball, bring the you know, the winger up or the backfield up, and then kick from your nine or something. Like the way they did it, it just didn't manipulate the backfield at all, and it just made it far too easy for the Highlanders to just get straight into a rhythm and too easy to pick off, and it just didn't. It didn't set the standard that I was sort of expecting in terms of their kick strategy, and hadn't seen it. And like I got the theory of what they're trying to do. Maybe it was just poor execution, and they were looking for that contestable kicking game, but it was just far too far and far too easy for the Highlanders. And I think that got them off to the rocky start, and then they just couldn't peg it back from there. But the Highlanders looked really good, and they were really sharp from that week off, and they prepared really well. And maybe the Reds, I think it was a really unfair short turnaround after a final. They win a final and then get a Friday night game. That's pretty ruthless. and you know, they have to rest a lot of players, a lot of their big guns coming off the bench. So there's a lot of reasons as to why they weren't as slick as we were expecting. And I think if you were ever to get the Reds in this competition, that was a perfect occasion for the Highlanders, not making excuses for them.
You guys are in a similar situation. How hard was it actually to turn around from a final into week one?
Yeah, it's not your normal preparation. Obviously, you play a week more than some of the other teams. And yeah, we had probably a later start, but fortunately we had the extra day. So, you know, feel sorry for those, not sorry, but I guess it was just a bit unfortunate for those Reds boys having to travel as well and then having that day extra. But I guess for us, yeah, it was a little bit tougher, I think. You know, obviously, having the celebrations with family and friends, and having it probably starting a day later. But, you know, for us, it was just more so getting the job done, and I was trying to back it up. But it was a little bit different. It's obviously not a normal week, but yeah, for us, it was tough. But again, got the win, and but again, we've got a tough encounter against the Reds this week. Who, I think will be a little bit different. It's their 10th year anniversary of when they beat us in the final, so that'll add motivation to their group. And obviously Thorny, we have no added motivation, have putting a lot of work into the jersey when it's time in the Crusaders. So we're expecting a different team. And I think one thing for that Reds game, the Highlanders attacking kick game, really, they really benefit from that. I think Mitch Hunt putting a lot of kicks, if you're talking around manipulating the backfield, they get it to his pair of hands, and then they'd bring their full back up quite quick, and they'd put in a lot of kicks in behind him, which actually got him behind them. And they reap rewards from that. And I think with that pressure of the kicking game, putting those contestables up, you want to say contestables, probably the execution was off a little bit with the Reds, probably led to them not being able to get out of their half early in that first half. Yeah. The inability just to be able to not exit out gave the Highlanders a lot of opportunities to get into that into their 22. And I thought, you know, Aaron Smith's tempo in that, especially in that department of the field, really led to their old ways of being able to attack in that face post shape, and really, really hurt the Reds. So, they'll probably see that, and they'll get back home, and they're going to pose a lot more problems, I think, being emotional back at home with that reunion, 10-year anniversary, and being back at home.
I like what the Highlanders have done as well. We've seen a lot of specials, and we spoke about that around the line-out plays. And they showed a little bit of that, but then they went to the mall, and a lot of the Reds were standing off. And obviously three tries to the hookers shows that, you know, they read the pitches and the cues and adjusted and went straight through the middle of them. And that's the benefit of changing your attack and having the ability to have a bit of success in and around the tail of that line out in the 22. It has defences thinking, well, we've got to be aware here, and it doesn't allow you to commit. And you hesitate just that second, and if you get that punch and that maul going, Nash Dixon's one of the best, as we know, at the back of that maul, and he made some great decisions to fly off and score, and then Coltman doing the same. They're really finding that mojo back, the Highlanders, in that balance of attack when they get into that 22, and they're becoming quite a ruthless team. When they get in there, they come away with points.
It's difficult. Obviously, the opposition team, you know, they do their homework. But when you've got that much variety,
it's tough, and that's what I mean. They're becoming quite ruthless in their execution, and they're really clear on their plan and accurate in winning the ball first, but then and you know, executing it is the other piece of the puzzle, which they probably didn't have quite right at the start of the season, and now they're having guys committed to their lines to suck in those defenders that gives them the ability to, you know, go for the kill and score points.
Mm-hmm. Bryn, execution wasn't a problem on attack for the Hurricanes or the Waratahs, but on defence, they didn't even bother.
Yeah, I can imagine Corey Jane will be having a few sleepless nights over in Sydney, or when he's back in Wellington. But yeah, it was definitely an attacking spectacle, wasn't it? You know, you look at that Waratahs try that probably could be nomination for try of the year with that long range effort. But it was an attacking flowing game. And I think, again, we've talked a lot around the Hurricanes face play shape and how much opportunities it creates and how many and how hard it is to defend. And that was at the forefront on the weekend. So, I think they'll probably give the attack a big tick, scoring cricket runs. But, just defensively, it was pretty... They'll probably have an honest review around that. But again, for the Waratahs, their attack was great as well. You know, when you can score 48 points, or it was 48 points, it's great for their attacking coach. But I think both teams will probably go away and look at their defence and be able to how they can be a little bit better around that.
I think on their defence, it's funny when you look at the stats and just shows you stats don't always show the full picture. The Canes tackled at 89% and the Tars at 87%.
So they just weren't there to tackle.
Yeah, so it's when you the punish of the, when they missed one, it almost led to a try. Mm. You know, if you use Lulsey's try, when he just busts through, he scores. So it's that scramble D wasn't there as such. But if it was 47% possession to the Tars, 53% to the Hurricanes. The Hurricanes made nearly double the amount of tackles. So although Corey Jane might be having sleepless nights, and I know that I'm not defending New Zealand versus Aussie here, but it shows that even though that the possession was quite even, the fact that Canes nearly made double the amount of tackles shows that they at least made the Tars really try and earn the tries. So they made 204 attempts, 181 tackles, to the Tars 98 tackles for 113 attempts. So they were constantly having to actually get through the bodies to have to score those 48 points. I know 48 points isn't great, but at least they were putting bodies in front of them to get those tackles. And what they can't live with, I think, both defensive outlets, is the tries through the middle. And you mentioned the Tars will be happy with their attack, and I think it was all based around Gordon. So Gordon, we mentioned last week, against a rush D, which the Hurricanes have, if the nine can get out like a Nick White, And there's that staggered rush D. He sucks in defence, and if he can pick the right player, a hole will appear, because if they're not connected and if you've got quick ball, it creates that space. And, you know, if you looked at those first few tries, he had a winger on his shoulder and he pops it and he goes through. He has forwards coming around the court, bodies in motion, he picks the right guy. I don't even think the guy that he hit, the lock, was expecting it. If you watch on the replay, he's like, oh, and then he offloads and scores. And then if it gets to the point where they're not even in holes and the Hurricanes are set, he can go deep out the back to a first five. But because Gordon is taking that ball out and he's running and he's sucking in a defender, It's giving them quite a lot of options, and I think that's the key to the Waratahs' success going forward, and something the Blues will need to be aware of, because he's actually quite effective at it when he gets confident. And he hasn't played a lot of footy this year, but that will give him a lot of confidence for the way he played on the weekend.
The CEO from the Waratahs comes out and says they need a complete overhaul after the loss. That can't be good for the team currently playing. You don't want to read that headline, do you?
Not when, they've already got rid of their coach. They've already disrupted the season by doing that. Then after this game, I suppose that what they're trying to do, I suppose, is to send a message to the fan that they understand it's not looking right, and they're trying to put things in place to get a change, I suppose. That's what I assume he's trying to do. But it's not ideal to the players. But the players also understand the scoreline's not ideal as well. And at the end of the day, we are in a results-based business. You do have to shore up and can't allow that many points. But again, I think it will tighten up. And I'll use Jordy Barrett's influence as an example. We're so used to seeing Jordy, and if you look at his try where he set up, I think it was Umanga Jensen, and if you've got the forward runner, and he normally has a tip runner outside him, and he's got another guy outside him, and he stays square. You're defending me as a Waratahs, another Waratahs defender out on the tip runner, and Jordy Barrett pops up on my outside shoulder, and he runs through, and he busts through between us because there's no defender there. We're so used to seeing that as Kiwis, and we will always mark Jordy and so close up that space. The Waratahs didn't, and he busts through and he links with Umanga Jensen. Umanga Jensen scores. So they'll get used to these sort of nuances that the Kiwi teams try to play. And again, we've seen Jordy Barrett come from the inside where he loops around. There's a short ball player, and when he scored his own individual try, he started inside. Yeah. I think Auburn Ledger gives it out the back, and he just runs around and scores. And there's that short ball runner that sucks in that defender. Again, we saw that they did it against the Crusaders. So there's a few phase play things that Australian teams probably haven't seen that, again, I think after the weekend, they'll be aware of and adjust, and we won't see, I suppose, the tries that we saw that were so easily, I suppose, executed on the weekend. So I don't think it's as panic stations as that article suggests, but yeah. I can probably see where he's trying to send a message to the fans that they're on top of it as such, I suppose.
Yeah. I was going to ask about rebuilding, but the Crusaders know nothing about rebuilding. All they know about is the title. So I'll ask anyway, Bryn, what would they do if they were to rebuild? How do they go about it?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, first and foremost, you've got to be able to have a plan in place for what that looks like. And patience is probably the word you want to use. And it's probably not suitable for a business like ours when, you know, it's all based on results and being able to get wins on the table. So I think it's, you know, All teams go through a rebuild, and if you look at with the Waratahs, a lot of their players, players that have done a lot for their club have gone offshore. So you've got to be patient, have a plan in place around then. So you could have a coach that you trust and can have a plan for about, you know, for example, you know, 3 years would be, you know, a minimum of having trust for a coach to be able to have his plan around what that looks like and having the players that he wants, and then having a brand of style that he wants to bring to the team as well. So I think that's one of the the solutions that you could have. But again, it's pretty tough when you are losing games, and you've got to be brave in those certain scenarios because, you know, for change, for a lot of guys that have left, and if it's a young team that they're a little bit inexperienced, you've got to be able to trust them. So I think moving forward, that's probably a solution that they could have. Whether they have the patience and they can do that, will probably soon be seen in the future.
That probably leads us to the Blues quite well, because they've shown patience in their rebuild. Got a good win on the weekend.
Yeah, look, I was really happy with the performance. I think it was a little bit scratchy probably the first 30 minutes with a few errors. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there was 11 unforced errors and most of those came in that 30 minutes. But what I liked about was, I suppose, the tactical shift and that patience you spoke of. If I used, for that tactical shift, I used Oteri Black. This kicking game, for example, he caught it on the halfway. He runs 10 metres, so he's now in his attacking half around the 40, which is quite a good zone, and he plugs the corner. And it didn't go out, and they end up making a tackle the Rebels about 5 metres out from the try line, and they get a line out just, you know, by their 22. And then Zahn Sullivan catches around the halfway, and he kicks a nice flat kick, and it goes out. So they clearly had a tactical shift around, we're going to win that territory battle, because they know when they win that territory battle and they, you know, sort of try to wear teams out in the first half, that they can come on, on top of them, come home strong. And then the tactical shift again was build scoreboard pressure. We saw every time they got a penalty, they went for three. And even from long distance, Zahn Sullivan got a good boot, so he went for the long kick. So at 12-3, although for the amount of ball they had, and their tactical kicking game, it didn't show on the scoreboard. You knew the Rebels had to, they were being run around a lot, they were having to make a lot more tackles, and you knew it was going to come at some stage. And it was just before half time, obviously it clicked, and then that flowed on to the second half. So that, those sort of tactical shifts were great. And then what also I liked as well was we saw that dual game. And what I mean by that is, if we used Tom Robinson's try or AJ Lamb's try, it was, you know, ball up, tempo, you know, if the ball's there and the halfback's not there, the forwards were up, giving the ball, that offload game, but winning collisions first, accurate execution offload game, and then, you know, obviously cross-field kicks, tries, but then if the ball was slow, it was good decision-making, let's get connected. And Akita and Hoskins' try was, let's go together, let's use our muscle and let's be smart and get the ball over the try line that way. So having the ability to go between the two. And then thirdly, dominant set piece, the scrum, you know, they weren't happy with where that should be with the amount of cattle they had. And they just really set the tone, and they, you know, delivered at line out and scrum. And then the most important part was defence. If you watch Finlay Christie, and Bryce Heem's denied try is the best example of the defence. Finlay Christie shoots out of a cannon with the back of that line out, and Rico Ioane closes it off and puts his skill set under pressure, and obviously bounces up into Bryce Heem's hand and gets a little knock on from Rico. But that was the defensive pressure all night that the Blues showed, and their one-on-one tackle accuracy and that constant work together and willingness to be desperate if they were broken. You know, and to not have a try scored against them to win 53, although that, all that beautiful stuff on attack that I've just spoken about was great, it was more on the other side of the ball that was most impressive for me. And that was just a complete performance, but it was all done about by working them down in that first 40 minutes to be able to open the floodgates and finish on top of them in that second 40.
And make you feel pretty good about where they stand in this comp?
Oh, absolutely, but I also don't want to, you know, start, you know, crowing from the rooftop, because there's no need to put unnecessary pressure on them, and there's no need for them to put unnecessary pressure on themselves. And I really like what Todd Coventry's done, is he's come out and said, no, you know, that's just, we're one game at a time. And they've really refocused and tried to reshape their Trans-Tasman, and it is one week at a time and one, you know, focus at a time. And the next job is the Waratahs, and you can't take your eye off the ball, and we've seen that. You know, you can't just, you can't not be ruthless every day. You've got to be relentless in that preparation to be, you know, a contender for that final. And you can't even look at the final. You can't talk about the final. You can't talk about the next week. It's the Waratahs. And that's where their heads are at, and that's where their focus is at. And that's what I like about where they're shaping this tournament.
Their draw, I think, is also quite handy in that way they get to build into it. If you have the Rebels and the Waratahs early on, you get to get your structures right, you get to figure the Aussies out before you hit the big boys, Bryn.
Yeah, I guess you do. And I think, you know, they had a hell of a performance on the weekend. And, you know, the thing that I like around your summary around that trip was definitely their balance of play. Like, if you look at the stats, like, it was pretty impressive attacking display. If you look at it, they had 28 defenders beaten, 19 clean breaks and 12 offloads. And, you know, you'd think that with those kind of stats there that they ran the ball every single time, but they didn't. They actually kicked more than the Rebels as well. They had 24 kicks and the Rebels had 15. So it was a balanced display, especially, you know, I look at that. I think it was in the 66th minute, the AJ Lamb try probably was a great summary of how their game went. You know, they had great go-forward ball, great offloading between interplay with the forwards, with the backs as well. And then Harry Plummer sees the space with AJ Lamb on the wing, gives him a nice attacking kick, and it's done easily. But I think that just that kind of try set up with how they were on the game. I think you are right, Jip, that first 30 minutes, they it was a bit of an arm wrestle, and they got their points with penalties. But, yeah, it was a very, very good attacking display and defensively as well, that you alluded to, Jip. But they'll take a lot of confidence out of that. And I think, you know, the Waratahs team that attacks very well from the amount of points that they saw on the weekend. So all the messages that's been said from Tom and their coaches around next task, next game that they have, is going to be pretty big, because I think you are right, Jip, especially in this competition, you can't afford to not be on, because, you know, a loss in this competition is probably, it could be your season done. So no doubt that we're having those conversations in that group, but a very good start for the Blues. I thought they were the best performing Kiwi team of the week.
On that note, I mean, really, week two is a major week, because if you lose in week two, you're suddenly in a position where it's almost playoff time, isn't it? If you want to make this final.
Yeah. Yes and no. I think with bonus points and just, I feel like this competition is going to tighten up and teams are going to be able to beat other teams that have lost in weeks prior. I think, well, maybe I'm hoping that you're going to be able to drop a game and it's going to be tighter than we think, and it's not going to be two teams that win five that make the final. Just so it makes it a little bit interesting. Because you would hope that they get used to each other and that it does create a little bit of a tight gap, that say that the Reds that lost to the Highlanders, the Reds can, you know, I don't know if this will happen, but if they beat the Crusaders this week, it doesn't mean the Crusaders aren't going to make the final, as an example. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean the Reds can't make the final because they lost to the Highlanders, because the Reds at full strength are a really good side. So I don't think if you drop one, it's not, but it is, you can't drop two.
Yeah.
And you can't draw. And I think if you drop one, you definitely have to pick up bonus points to make a final, and those bonus points are crucial. And I think, you know, the way Razor was really frustrated at not getting the bonus point when they're in a great position to, shows how important it is and how aware he is of it. And that's just the way most teams are thinking. They know how crucial those bonus points are going to be.
And for the Force in particular, that missed kick, when you say that, it's a huge thing. It's one of those this is do or die kind of moments to get those points.
Well, it's massive for them because it's a home game, and the fact that travel for them is so big. They've got it, like, travelling there is hard for teams, but then you've got to think they've got to go on the road for 3 weeks. Which is, you know, like, if they could have got a home win, it makes that, you know, I suppose, road trip a little bit easier. And I just think, again, it's just such a fighting win from the Chiefs, and it's just testament to their year that they found a way to win that game. Like, they had no ball. They, you know, made double, nearly triple the amount of tackles, you know, two yellows, two reds. I mean, I don't know how they found a way to win it. It was that period of the yellow card for the Force that got them that result, as I mentioned before. But it is a tough loss for the Force when they had it, you know, and such an accurate goal kicker. But pressure does funny things, doesn't it?
It does. What do you make of the Chiefs, Bryn?
Yeah, to get a win probably is the most important thing for them. You know, probably pretty similar to us, I reckon. You know, look, they had obviously discipline issues very similar to us. And, you know, if you're talking around performance-wise, they probably wouldn't put that up there with the best performance of the year. But you know, sometimes in this competition, you've just got to find a way. You've got to find a way to win, and that shows how good, you know, shows the character of your team. Look, they'll walk away from that thinking, you know, we could have done things a lot better around there. But to walk away with 4 points on a short week travel, coming off a final, you know, there's a lot of emotional high that you have from a final. We felt that as well. You know, we weren't at our best, and you know, it just comes with having such a high of what that final brings, and then you've got to be able to switch off and then change on to the next format, which is Super Rugby Trans Tasman. So they'll take want to have a lot of learnings out of it, but they'll take that win. It's a crucial 4 points again. If you lose that game, then it's a little bit different, but it shows the character around. With, you know, you look at the yellow cards and the red cards to be able to scrape through a win in Perth, which we've talked about is a tough place to play. So they'll have an honest review, but they've got the win, and most importantly, that's what you needed going from Perth.
Mm-hmm. They've got the travel home and then a game against the Brumbies. it's not an easy one to go in.
No,
very very difficult. We've had some Test rugby confirmed this week. Tonga and Fiji in New Zealand for Test matches in July. Fair bit of star power. We'll see big Ben Tamefuna and a few other big boys coming back for Tonga. Are you excited about those clashes?
Yeah, I think it'll be great. I think the Fijian ones will be exciting too if they can get some players from the Northern Hemisphere, and that should set up for an exciting series. And it'll just be great to see some international rugby again down here, and obviously give us a good look at some, you know, talent that's been performing well, and some, you know, experienced talent, but some opportunities maybe that some guys performing really well during Super Rugby, getting some opportunity in the black jersey, and then building towards a rugby championship.
Yeah. Bryn, do you think we can expect to see full strength teams from Tonga and Fiji making their way here?
Oh, it's whether they can get released from their clubs. I hope so, because it's a great opportunity for the Pacific Island nations. You know, we don't usually play too many test matches, especially in a row, against them, and let alone in the same year. So, I mean, for those boys that are playing the Northern Hemisphere or wherever they are affiliated to, it'll be great for them to come down and play New Zealand, because, again, it's a great opportunity for a lot of players that we don't play Pacific Islander nations quite a lot, especially back-to-back. So, fingers crossed that they do let them go, and it can be expected, because, you know, I think the Tongan game is going to be held at Mount Smart. If you look at the pitches that they had in the Rugby League World Cup, it'd be pretty great if they could have a strong side to play the All Blacks in that kind of fixture, especially at that ground and how much support they have in Auckland.
That's the Tonga home game.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's in the test window where they release the players, so they should be strong teams.
Yeah, it doesn't always work out that way, though.
It doesn't always, but we can be hopeful. Put it out to the universe, it'll come back.
Positive energy. The Springboks. There's no positive energy for the Lions coming out of South Africa right now. Alan Wynne-Jones is geriatric. He's, you know, he might as well be on a Zimmer frame as far as they're concerned. And this is a 3-0 series win.
Mate, I saw, I think they called him a plotter. I was like, oh my God, that is just going to be bandied around the changing room for sure. Like, that was just ruthless, when the squad was named. Like, coming out of the SA media, I just couldn't believe it. I was literally gobsmacked at how ruthless they were. Like, I thought it was quite a strong squad. There was a bit of fresh talent in there. Yeah, there was some experience, but I think the performance of Alan Wynne-Jones during the Six Nation certainly didn't come across as someone that was geriatric or worthy of that sort of examination. I don't know if you think that way, Bryn, but seriously, harsh on the big fella.
Oh, yeah, I was reading those comments, and I was just like, oof, are they seeing something that we're not seeing, Jip? Because, look, it's going to add fuel to fire, isn't it? I think it just adds a little bit more to that series. But I think if you're sitting in that South African camp, you're probably a little bit distraught about hearing that, because it's just going to add fuel to fire for those Lions boys. But, no, he's definitely not a plotter, that's for sure. You don't get 100-plus tests being a plotter.
No appreciation for the engine room. There's never appreciation for the big fellas in the engine room that clean all the rucks, do the tough carries, you know, win the line-out ball, put the head in the, you know, in between props and hookers' backsides. Oh, Alan Wynne-Jones, mate, you're a legend.
What it has done, it's going to send executive messages around the world where we're going to be talking about it. So he's done his clickbait, he's done it pretty well, hasn't he?
He has done well, because one, we are talking about it, and two, it's exciting for building into the series, but also I think it probably hypes up the atmosphere in their camp. You know, you can really build on this in terms of motivation as players and the leadership group and saying, you know, we're going into their backyard, you know, this is what they think of us, no one backs us, backs against the wall mentality, and there's actually nothing more powerful than that as a, you know, as an individual, but as a group and galvanising you together when you're away from home. So I don't know if they should be chucking out too many more articles like that, because it is quite helpful when you're on tour.
Yeah. The other lions are hobbits. Like, if you can call Mauro Itoje a hobbit, that's a very big hobbit.
Oh, yeah, I think they're off the mark, but...
it's good fun.
We all know that... what was it? I think Warren came out with the...
Oh, the red nose.
Yeah, the red nose last time. Well, I think, imagine if a few players dressed up as hobbits, if they win it 3-0 or 2-1 at a press conference, that would be quite entertaining.
Yeah, what we do know about Warren Gatland is he can hold a grudge. Like, if you know, he remembers things that people say and he'll make you pay.
Oh, well, so he should.
Yeah.
So he should. I reckon Alan Jones should just come in with a Zimmer frame if they do it 3. If they would do it 3-0... He should just do something like, with a walking stick or something. I don't know. I think it would be quite hard to win 3-0, but it would be funny to keep in your back pocket.
Now, there's also this week, you know, Rassie found his little bit of motivation as well. Rugby Pass wrote an article basically saying, yeah, you guys are world champions, but you haven't played in a year or so, and we're not going to consider you the best in the world. We'll consider you the World Cup champions. It got tweeted out, and in reply, Rassie Erasmus says... Lions do not concern themselves with the opinions of sheep. And I was like, wow.
So both camps are utilising the media to fire themselves up. Well, I'm surprised he replied and that he's scrolling through Twitter. But he certainly knows how to motivate a squad, and I'm sure he might not be concerned with that opinion. Because, as he says, lions don't concern themselves with opinions of sheep.
But they read them.
But he certainly reads them. But I'm sure that will be, as I said before, posted up in changing rooms to motivate. And again, it's dangerous because it does flick a switch. And I think South Africa are in a win-win. And because there is no expectation of them, just because they haven't played international rugby for so long, and I've said it before, that if they do well, everyone's like, oh, they are the world's best, and you're only as good as your last game, and then they come out and they do well. That's like, how good are they? And if they don't do so well, then it's like, well, you know, how could they do so well? They haven't played together, you know, they're coming off the back of no preparation, rah, rah, rah. So you know, like they're in a pretty good spot, if you can look at it that way. It's not an ideal spot, but they're in a good spot in terms of how they can come out of the series, and they've got nothing to lose. And when you've got nothing to lose, you can almost chance your arm a little bit, which will be exciting to see how they approach it from a tactical point of view. And we know Rassie is a genius of bringing groups together and using certain things to motivate. And he certainly is a lion in terms of his preparation and his mindset. And the irony is he uses a lion when he's playing the Lions. He'll certainly have a tactic to utilise that and other things throughout to motivate his group.
It's a big year for Rassie this year, Bryn. He's got this tour. Then there's the Rugby Championship, which they haven't competed in for a long time. The Box this year have got a chance to really consolidate previous efforts.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, you look at a Lions series, it's a special thing to be a part of. It's every 12 years. So you have talked around the preparation side of it around, you know, they haven't played a lot of rugby, but, you know, you've got to give them the credit when it's due. You know, they are world champions, and the last time they did play, they won a World Cup final. So, and being at home, they'll want to impress, you know, we've talked about it a little bit around the crowd, and they won't have that against the Lions, but they're a proud country. And they'll be that excited. You know, you talk around the All Blacks when they want to put on the All Blacks jersey. know, they love putting it on, and you know, South Africans haven't had an opportunity to do that. So, you know, they'll be roaring to go, and there'll be motivation that's obviously been fueled by the comments from a few of the media. But then they've got the Rugby Championship, you know, if hopefully they do play in that, because, you know, we need them in our competition. We know Australia and Argentina are great, great teams, but, you know, having the South Africans is really important for the development of New Zealand rugby and, you know, world rugby and Rugby Championship rugby. So, yeah, really looking forward to seeing how they go against the Lions, and then, you know, from that, from them playing and getting experience in that game, they'll be hopefully playing the Rugby Championship where, yeah, they'll be wanting to test themselves against, you know, us, Australia and Argentina as well.
When you compare their preparation to playing Tonga and Fiji, in a lot of ways it puts them in a really good spot.
A great spot. I think, you know, that it's, I mean, that's the biggest part of the year probably, is the Lions series, and it puts them in a good spot to be prepared for what's to come in that Rugby Championship and end of year tour. I mean, it's really starting at the top of the hill, isn't it, and probably coming down. Not that it's coming down, it's probably a slight decline, because the All Blacks and Aussie and RG are tough, and then obviously the Northern Hemisphere tour will be tough as well, but it sets it up after, I suppose, missing a year of footy. There's no better way of having that calendar year to look forward to as a player and to test yourself. You know, they've been sitting there waiting, wanting to get back in that jersey. Well, I don't know. There's no better year to want to make that squad and make every post a winner.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a good year for Test footy in general. I think we missed a proper year last year. And like people missed playing the Australian teams, missing seeing the entire year play out the way we used to is going to be big for rugby fans.
Absolutely, and I think that showed in how engaged everyone was in the Six Nations, especially down here in the Southern Hemisphere. I think it was the most engaged I've seen in that competition. You know, like if you were talking rugby, I felt like when you were at, you know, barbecues or things with family and friends, more people were talking about the Six Nations than I'd ever heard before. And I think that showed that, you know, when the international aspect is taken away, there's been a little bit more appreciation for, you know, the world game and what's been going on at that international stage. Because, you know, and to be fair, I think it was the most, you know, the best quality rugby played in the Six Nations this year, and how tight that competition was created a lot of excitement as well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.